It's time for Wells Tech episode 328 for February 11th, 2014. Sally and I have a rather spirited debate about the Church of Google and Nicholas Carr's book, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. Interesting conversation about the future of and how we can focus and how productive we are and ultimately how we learn. So you want to stay tuned for that. We have some excellent community feedback this week. In fact, a lot of it. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that, as well as our regular tips and picks and all that other good stuff. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Wells Tech, a show where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And we're so glad you decided to join us this week. My name is Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we've got a show to do. This is actually episode 328, and we're in the midst of winter, and I'm really looking forward to not being in the midst of winter anymore. I can't help myself, Sally. I know we made kind of a resolution where we weren't going to talk about the weather anymore, but it's been a little brutal.
Well, I can report from Leon, Mexico, that it is officially spring there. I had some
February
correspondence.
February 1st, yeah, I saw the same message from Mike Hartman, yes.
Yeah, so we can
Thanks
at least
for sharing, Mike, by the
think
way.
Warm thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I told him maybe in June it would show up here. So.
Yeah, I've forgotten what dry ground looks like.
Yeah.
Just kind of frozen. But anyway, enough of our moaning and complaining. We've got a very hot show this week, and it is entitled The Church of Google. Last year we had The Church of Facebook. This year it's The Church of Google, and that's an actual chapter name in the book that we've been reviewing, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. There's the book Sally's holding up, Nicholas Carr. And this chapter's all really a lot about the evil that is Google and what Google is doing to our brains, so to speak. So I'm a little sarcastic there, Sal. You can tell I'm a little, I'm not upset at the chapter. I just have some issues with it.
Some issues, huh? Well, you know, you describe it as the evil of Google, and I think there are definitely people, probably some of our listeners, who would agree and not really have the highest respect for Google. I think people look at Google as being pretty invasive and mining a lot of data about us. And this chapter kind of outlines how Google started and, you know, how things progressed with just having a great search algorithm into the monetization, using AdWords in particular, and, you know, how they capitalized on that and how that turned into billions of dollars for them. And, you know, I think Google's using that money and going in a lot of different directions and involved in a lot of different things. So that's kind of the Google side of things as laid out in the chapter.
So where do we start here, Sally?
Well, you know,
where do you want to start, I should say?
One thing that I kind of asked myself as I went back to this is, you know, why do we care what Google's doing? You know, obviously, we want to be control our own data and things like that. We don't want them to know too much about us and things. But I think it ties into the book discussion because we talked about our brains being rewired. And one quote that I drew out of the book was that every click we make on the web marks a break in our concentration, a bottom-up disruption of our attention, and it's in Google's economic interest to make sure we click as often as possible. They want us to click so we see more ads, we click more of their advertisement, that kind of thing. Google is quite literally in the business of distraction. So I think that's the big hook, at least, to the book's premise that our brains are being rewired and that Google is assisting with that in a great way because we click so often and they want us to. They optimize their software to help us do that.
Right. But when you think about it, every retailer, every person in business is in the business of distraction, right? They want to distract us from our normal routine, our daily life, and distract us into thinking, well, we need this product, or we need to do this, or we need to go there. That's what they're all about. That's what an advertisement is. It's a distraction. It's in the midst of a show. They want to take your attention away from what you're watching, the storyline, whatever, and say, you need this. So that's advertising, and that's been around for a long, long time. That's what ads are in newspapers, right? They are distractions. They are meant to draw the eye away from maybe the reason that you're reading a newspaper, which is to get the news. Same with a magazine ad, right? They're all in the business of distraction. So why is this any different?
Well, that was going to be my question for you. I think it is different, and I think what your point is it isn't, but I think that the vastness.
Maybe easier.
Yeah, right. The easier, the speed, the quantity of links available to us, the programmed likelihood that you would have interest on the links that they're making available to us. And I don't think it's just Google. You know, I think, you know, Google is one example right. of this kind of thing going on. And I'm not saying that it's right or wrong or necessarily a different strategy than what you're describing in a newspaper or whatever, but I do see the point that our brains react differently now and are more distracted, it seems, by the fact that so many options are available to us and so many things can be fed to us in such quick succession.
Yep.
Yes?
Yeah. I mean, I hear you, and I believe that this is a challenge, but ultimately his point in the beginning chapters was our brains are malleable. They're plastic. And I think the mind, and this was my point, I think, last month, is you know, the mind that really cares about being productive, the person that really cares about being productive is going to figure out a way to ultimately thrive in a hyper-connected world. And those that aren't, won't. And that's no different than it always has been.
Hmm.
Right?
I would say it probably is different. 'Cause those that don't figure it out or don't get on top of the fact that they're losing something in this process are becoming more the majority, and we're dealing with different minds as a result of that.
So do you think we're going to have fewer Einsteins in the future, fewer people inventing things, fewer people thinking deep thoughts? Is that his point?
Maybe so. Fewer people that have experienced or know the depth of knowledge that can come from thinking deep thoughts, from connecting these concepts in their brain, from taking the time. He kind of takes an interlude in the middle of the chapter even and talks about pastoral thinking, I think, you know, time right. of reflection and contemplation and things. And that, you know, without that, you don't always draw those conclusions in your mind and make those deep learning experiences or whatever.
I would think deep thinkers are going to be deep thinkers, and regardless of the rapidity at which you move from piece of content to piece of content, I would suggest that deep thinkers are people who, you know, are wanting to go to do a deep dive in a particular subject area have more resources at their disposal than they ever had before. As opposed to going to a library and reading one book and then going to the library and reading another book and so on and so forth. They have the internet now that can bring a lot of different resources from a lot of different corners of the world to expand that thought, to feed that thirst for an idea and get even deeper than they could before because of the resources at their disposal.
Okay, and I agree with that. There are going to be people that are able to manage this and capitalize on the fact that that data is more accessible than ever before. I guess time will tell how it affects the vast right. majority who don't have those skills.
Yeah, and this is a very short period of time that we're studying too. So we have to keep that in mind as we're looking through what the internet is potentially doing or isn't doing. The one thing that I miss, and I kind of stepped back and looked at all the chapters that we just read through, is there's no, it's all about the mind. There's never any conversation about the soul. And as a Christian, that is absolutely part of the conversation. The soul that God has put in us really is the core of our being, not as much really the mind. So when you're thinking about how a person acts, how a person interacts with the world around them and the tools that God allows to be brought into their lives, the Christian looks at those things with a little bit different perspective than a scientist would. A Christian looks at those things as opportunities or things that God has placed in their life to be stewards of and to use to his glory. So that's a whole different conversation that's, I'm sure, not going to be touched on in this book. But what's the connection? What does this mean for somebody who is not just thinking about learning in a vacuum, but thinking about an eternal life and how God wants us to interact with each other and grow ourselves? I realize there are ramifications of that with Bible reading and those kinds of things. But really, the nuggets that God puts in his word, you don't have to read 20 chapters to really think deep thoughts and think important thoughts. You can read one verse or a half a verse and spend the time, obviously, again, the discipline with that verse and get a lot out of it.
Good point, Martin. I agree with you totally on that. And, you know, one thing that kind of struck me with the vast amount of data and the things we're being bombarded with, that maybe the church is the place where we offer that place of reflection, that we allow people the time and don't bombard them with so much, but yet help them and assist them in making those deeper connections
right.
with the Word.
Yeah. I wouldn't dispute the fact that we have a challenge with, you know, the hyper-connected world and that we live in, but recognizing that the purpose, you know, our purpose in the world is very singularly focused, you'd call it that. I think it becomes a little less important, you know, some of the things that we're talking about here. So.
Wow, I think we're actually agreeing on something.
We better retrench here. he has a lot of interesting quotes, and I think to a certain degree, you know, he's right on with Google. They're in the business of trying to move us around the internet as quickly as possible to build up those ads. But, you know, on the other hand, we recommend Google all the time as a way to get stuff done, as a good educational tool. And so while Google may be making their money in one place, we're actually benefiting. Our schools are benefiting, you know, putting Chromebooks in there and some of the other stuff that Google brings to the table in education. We're benefiting in other ways. You and I do this podcast using Google products. So whether that was their intention or not, I think there are uses that are helpful. So.
Yeah, but I was even reminded of a news
release. Oh, she's going to share her screen. I wonder.
I am.
If this is going to be the last time she gets to do that during our podcast today.
This is a test. A news release recently from Google about smart contact lenses that can actually use your tears to determine your blood glucose level. So,
isn't that awesome?
A huge breakthrough. And, of course, my boys were real excited at the Borg-like look that they would have with this transistor thing in their eye, but a huge breakthrough for those that have to check their blood glucose 4 or 6 times a day by pricking their finger. So, yeah, Google's everywhere and doing some amazing things, and we are benefiting from that for sure.
Yeah, it's this book that we should probably stop talking about so we can get on with the rest of the show was written, what, in 2009?
I think so.
something like that. And Google, I mean, Nicholas Carr is probably, you know, even more over the top on Google at this point because they're investing heavily in artificial intelligence. They're buying some big name artificial AI companies. They're into robotics now. And he makes a statement already that they're trying to replace the brain. And, you know, looking at what they're doing, Google would probably not say it as strongly, and I guess I wouldn't say it as strongly. I look at tools like this as ways to extend the brain. You know, that's how we talk about it in productivity circles, so to speak. Just find the tools that can help you externalize things that you just can't keep crammed in there. There is a finite nature to the brain. So, interesting discussion. And if you're not reading the book, I think, you know, regardless of, you know, the issues or the, you know, the direction or some of the assumptions that are made in the book, I would say it's worth a read. Especially if you are an educator, I would say that's probably the sweet spot. And that's kind of how we fell to the book with Dave Tess, right, who is a professor. And I think in educational circles, these are some good debates to have because, you know, you're dealing with minds that are now have grown up with and will grow up with nothing but this distracted reality.
Correct. You know, Martin, one of the tools Google makes available to us in our Hangout is a Q&A tool. And we haven't mentioned that yet on this show, but we do want to invite our audience that's watching live to let us know your thoughts throughout the show. If you have comments or questions, be sure to include those. There's a QA link right there on the live feed where you can ask those questions.
Yep. And if you aren't watching live, if you can carve out an hour on Tuesday afternoons at 4 o'clock Central, we would love to have you. WellsTechLive.wells.net. But if you can't, keep on listening, keep on watching, because I think this is a valuable conversation. And then feed us your comments, questions through the other many other channels that you have with at your disposal to interact with us on the show notes page, WellsTech.wells.net. Shall we move along, Sally, to our tips of the week?
I would love to hear what you have to share with us, Martin.
My tip of the week is a productivity tip, and I just have to find it here in our little map. It's based on an article that I ran across a while back from Lifehacker. I think it was Lifehacker. No, Business Insider. Business Insider published an article about things that the worker who works at home most of the time can do to stay focused and to stay productive. I know a lot of our listeners, a lot of our viewers are people who work from home. They have a home office. A lot of pastors do that. Even teachers will spend time taking, doing lesson planning, doing that kind of stuff from a home office. And when you're constantly in a home office, there are many, many distractions that could present themselves that maybe don't, that will not present themselves in a more traditional office environment. And they're different, maybe different kinds of distractions. But one tip that I ran across that I thought was worth sharing was separate your digital devices. So a lot of people try and, you know, stay with one computing device, one phone, one tablet, whatever, and all of their stuff is on their work, and, you know, professional and personal. And that does tend to lead to distraction, where you might want to dip into the personal side when you're working on the professional side, or vice versa. So there is some value in trying to keep those separate, have a separate home computer versus a work computer. And if you're into tablets or phones, if your job provides a phone for you, maybe it's a smartphone especially, maybe it's not such a good idea to use that for personal purposes, even though a business may allow or permit that. Just from the fact that now you always have all of the things in your life at your disposal, even when you really want to focus on the work things versus the home things, or the home things versus the work things. You tend to distract yourself. So where you can, where it makes sense, maybe you want to separate that out and do it that way. So,
That's great advice, Martin. Someone who's worked from home for a long time,
yeah.
I would say my challenge has been more separating work from home, in the sense that when I'm home, workflows over into that. So keeping things separate keeps your sanity and gives you the break from work that you deserve when you're on your off hours. So great advice.
Okay. Your tip, Sally.
My turn. I am going to share my screen again, and it's going to work. I'm just so confident. Look at that.
Look at that. Wow.
And I'm sharing the PicMonkey website. Longtime listeners and watchers will know that PicMonkey is one of my favorite sites to recommend for easy image editing. And they've actually added a new feature to their arsenal. It's called the collage. I'm sorry, not the collage, the design feature. It's the third one here on the list. And basically, this allows you to start with a blank image palette. Instead of having to upload an image to get started in the software, you can start with a blank palette. You can choose some default sizes, or you can put in a custom pixel dimension to start editing and go from there. I have a great blog post where they kind of walk through all the things you can do with a blank palette. You can color it, you can add overlays, you can add text, and there's even a merge function, so when you're done, if you want to merge your layers together, you can do that. So basically, layered image editing with a super user-friendly interface, and I think you'll enjoy that feature on PicMonkey, so check it out.
Very good. Thanks. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a familiar tip. Have you recommended this before, or
I don't think I've done the design. Maybe I have, Martin. You probably have a better memory than me.
No, that's not true.
I don't know that I've talked about the design feature before. Okay. It's fairly new since late last fall.
Yep, I know you're a PicMonkey fan, and that's a great improvement. Picks of the week, Sally.
And I have one of those as well. You're going to be surprised. It's a hardware pick, and you might recognize it. It's from your friends at Ubiquiti. Yeah. Look at that. That is my brand new UFO Wi-Fi system that we purchased. We purchased through Amazon instead of directly from Ubiquiti because we saved like $1.95 in the process because it was slightly below the $89 price that's on the Ubiquiti website. But after the rave reviews from you, Andrew Willems, we decided it was time to improve our Wi-Fi system here on the home front.
So
designed for business, we bought this long range, which has like a 600-foot range. So we're going to try it from the garage when it gets warm enough to be outside again. but we were having challenges with multiple levels in our home. You know, we'd go to the basement or we'd go upstairs, and the Wi-Fi signal just wasn't great. And so we thought $89 or $86.74 or whatever it is that we paid was a reasonable amount to pay for improving that Wi-Fi signal. And we got a lot of great things along for the ride. We are now able to have like a guest network. So when our sons have their friends over, you know, we can give them a separate login than our traditional login to access everything. And you can even kind of ratchet down the ability of your guest network if you want to. So, so far so good. We're really happy. We could tell a noticeable difference in the Wi-Fi quality within the house. We do a lot of Google Hangouts with our son off at college, and just can tell that things are better on our Wi-Fi network because of our long-range Ubiquiti AP, I believe, is the product code or whatever. So check it out.
I never thought of that for home use. That'll be an interesting experiment. And when you think about it, it's about the same price as a decent router.
Right.
In fact, even if you buy two of them, $160-ish, something like that, that would be a kind of a mid to high range router, you know, like a Apple Airport, whatever. And then you have double the range. So that's nice. So where'd you put it? Is it out in plain sight?
It's tucked away on top of a bookcase, so where there's some covering and stuff.
Yeah, it's not real decorative. Well, maybe for the geeky family it is. So.
I think they even have like a ceiling mount attachment or whatever. But sitting on top of this bookcase, it's... We see it when we go upstairs because we're at a higher level, obviously, but that's it.
Cool. Well, I give a thumbs up to that pick. Nice job.
Yeah, you had a big influence over it, so.
Okay, we'll see. All right, my pick, let's see if I can get the right screen up here, is an iPhone or iPad app called QuizUp. And this really isn't ministry related. It's not going to change your life, although there are some things that could be construed as ministry related. QuizUp is simply a real-time quiz, kind of a trivia game that you play against other people who also have the same app. So there's they claim hundreds of topics, over 200,000 questions. You can play against friends, or you can play against anybody who happens to be online. You pick a category, you answer about 7 questions, and you're in a race to answer that question. Some of them are related to, let's say, food logos, so they'll show you a portion of a logo, for instance, and you have to pick of 4 choices which logo it belongs to, Burger King or McDonald's or whatever. They're not quite that easy, but they have sports teams, so one of the ones that I've been playing is San Francisco Giants trivia, so I will play against other people who are interested in quizzing up, and it's a competitive situation, and I'm nothing if not competitive, just ask my wife. So if you guess the answer correctly, you'll get credit, but you won't get as much credit if you don't answer it ahead of the other guy. So it's actually a very cool concept. And then I think the 6th round, this all takes about a minute to do an entire quiz. So the 6th round is worth double points. So if you're kind of bringing up the rear, you have a chance to, with one answer, go for the win. There is a Bible one, which is actually very interesting. The answers are not, some of these, you know, Bible trivia things, they're so simple that, you know, people who spend any time in church, you know, can get them easily. That's not the case with some of these questions. Some of them are fairly obscure, but I think they are all educational, in fact, some things that you should know and maybe are embarrassed not to know. It can be totally anonymous, or you can, like I say, do it with your friends. There's no cost to it. And once you get enough cred, so to speak, you do enough quizzes and win enough times, you win the right to be able to enter your own quizzes. So you can upload questions and answers and potential answers, and they'll include it in the application over time. Now, I haven't gotten to that point yet. They're going to tell me when I've played enough. But it's kind of a cool thing. You play you know, while you're standing in line or the doctor's office, or just when you've got a couple minutes to kill, you can do it quickly. And then if you play somebody and you lose, you can hit the rematch button, and they would get a little message that would say, you know, do you want to accept this rematch? Now, they don't have to, but then you can kind of, there's a chat function, so you can do a little trash talking. It's actually a pretty well done and cool app, and very popular right now. Only for iOS. They say an Android version is coming very soon. I would say it looks and works better on a iPad. Some of the text gets a little small, although the quiz itself is, you know, nice and big, as you can see there on the screen. But some of the points and those kinds of things, you get badges in the whole bit. So kind of a cool app. I haven't begun to explore all the different topics that are out there, but there's something for everybody.
Even San Francisco 49er fans. Wow.
Yeah, San Francisco Giants. I bet there's 49ers, too.
Oh, sorry. You said that's Giants. Okay. Sorry, I'm still back on the football season.
Yeah. But have you heard of this one, Sally?
No, I haven't. I've actually, it reminds me of a game I've been playing called Wits and Wagers. We played a board game, Wits and Wagers, and it's kind of along those lines, kind of trivia stuff, although it's not categorized like what you described. It's all over the place. And you make your guess, and everyone else does, and then you place bets on who guessed best. So you don't have to bet on your own answer. You see the whole gamut of answers, and you're just using little chips, even if you play, you know, the board game. It's just a chip thing. But it's fun, and cool. Learn some stuff in the process. So
yeah, awesome.
Yep.
All right, so that'll do it for our picks of the week. Let's move along. We have to make sure everybody is aware of the Interactive Faith Bible Study that is available every Wednesday evening, 6:30 and 8:30 Central Time. Interactive Faith Bible Study is something that was started by some pastors in the South Atlantic District, but it's kind of gone national now. And President Schrader is leading a study on reading your Bible and some of the obstacles that stand in the way between you and God's Word. And he did his first series last week, and now tomorrow, Wednesday, he will lead part two of that. It will be going all month, and the resources are online as well as the archive video, so you can catch up if you like. So just go to wells.net. I believe it's wells.net/interactivefaith, and you will get to the page that shows the archive video as well as the live feed. So tune in tomorrow.
We'll include a link on our show notes. I tuned in last Wednesday, was thinking about you guys there doing the broadcast, and it seemed to go really well. I could see the presentation that he was doing. There was time for interactive chat for people that were kind of on their own. They could discuss it with via the chat link that was available, and there was some really great discussion. I was really excited by it. So
yeah, the idea is for groups to get together and watch it together and then go through the discussion questions, but you can do it on your own as well. So Let's move on to community feedback. We ran short on time last week, so we pushed a little bit to this week, so we have a full boat.
Yes, we do. And I'm not sure if you're ready to start with the leadoff one there, but I can talk about our feedback from Google Plus to start with.
And go ahead.
Starting with some feedback on our last show, those of you that watched last week may remember that we had Drew Willems, the technology director at Shoreland Lutheran High School, join us last week. And he got rave reviews, Martin. We heard from Gail Potratz, who said, thought about you guys live yesterday as I participated in my weekly after-school faculty meeting. Caught the show on Wednesday and have to say the interview with Drew was really great. I'm so impressed with the vision of the leaders and their conscious plan to move forward with technology and education, and she means there at Shoreland in particular. What really is amazing is the willingness and buy-in from the faculty. And Drew talked about them investing like 50 hours on professional development, and so that is very impressive for them to be undertaking that. Also from Ted Kufall, he said the interview this week was with Drew Willems was fantastic. Absolutely makes me wish I could become a Shoreland Pacer and join the Chrome Depot. That's where I want to be too. I'm with you. Great to see faculty embracing technology like that. So not just kudos to Drew, but to the entire faculty at Shoreland. I think you guys are doing exciting things there.
Okay, I'm ready now with my
go little for it.
Some person I know who usually wants to remain anonymous, but whenever we say that, we know it's my wife, Debbie, recommended, and I'll share the screen here, something that I don't remember if we've talked about before. I think maybe it's been referenced. It's called the Haiku Deck. HaikuDeck.com, and really its purpose is to make presentations simple but elegant. And there are decks that you can build on the iPad or web. And I just logged in the other day, and there's all kinds of galleries here. But the concept is have good design principles, good imagery, good typography, and you're halfway to a good presentation. So I'm hoping everybody can see my screen. So I'm just going to sign in and show you one that I created here in about 5 minutes. So this is my first Haiku deck. I'm just going to edit the deck here. And it's a nice interface, and it's all slide-based. So you pick the slide type you want, and some are title slides, some are bulleted. So you don't have a lot of options. And then you go through the process. So if I were going to, so you can see the slides that I've already created here. One's just kind of a title slide. One is another title slide, but if I wanted to add another slide, I would just hit the plus button, and then you just click to edit. So slides while podcasting. And you can change that to bullets, and then you just go through the process here. So slides while podcasting is the name of the slide. And one of the neatest parts about this concept is that you type a phrase and it'll go out to the internet and find images that will fit what you wrote. So I'm going to type in podcast and see what kind of images they're going to recommend. And they're pulling images that are not copyrighted. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. So there's all kinds of different images. Here's one of a microphone. I'm just going to pick that one. And immediately that goes into the background of your slide. And then you go keep going through and you can modify your layout. You can add your own notes, your own speaker notes, and then finally you're done. So that when you're playing it, you've got the image in the background, you've got the text over the top. You can change themes. You can change the font style. For free, you get to share these online, so there is no cost for it. I think if you want to download them in some kind of format, you need to sign up for a paid account. But everything is saved online. Just kind of a neat and easy way to do a quick slide presentation that actually looks nice.
Excellent. I think quick and easy, cloud-based, those are key words that are very user-friendly these days. People are taking advantage of those. I could see teachers working with students to have them create that way. Good stuff.
Yep.
All right. We will go on then and share an article from our friend Tom Rosenau. It's called Google Chromebox for Meetings Aims to Usurp Enterprise with Chrome OS. And basically what Google is offering now, I think the price tag is right at $1,000, is a combination of computer, webcam, kind of a conference
speaker phone,
exactly, to make video conferencing super easy. It's kind of video conferencing in a box so that you can buy all the equipment you need, and of course they're operating it via their Chrome OS platform.
A little miniature keyboard, it looks like, wireless mm-hmm. keyboard they have. Well,
that also serves as a remote.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, $1,000.
You provide the monitor.
And you could be kind of enterprise level video conferencing, which, you know, I can remember the day, Martin, when video conferencing was just a dream of ours at the Synod. Something that was easy to accomplish by any means.
You could spend thousands and thousands
like,
of dollars on
yeah,
it.
Super, yeah,
for under $1,000, you have the whole shooting mats if you had the monitor. So this is probably a smart play. I don't know what kind of traction they're going to get, but they're obviously leveraging the very solid platform that they have with Google Hangouts and kind of a video conference ready-made. It's a good idea.
Yeah, in the article it basically says they're using it at Google and they figured they may as well package it because people ask them what they use and this is kind of the system that they use. So
Right.
All right, next up I just want to make mention that there's been some chatter on the Wells Tech listserv around the concept of free organ MIDI music. Norbert Langbecker asked the question, and many were willing to chime in and offer some links to different resources on the web. And it kind of went from MIDI to other areas as well. Some of the things that were offered were the openhymnal.org, a site called MusicEase, which actually is a fee-based site, but has over 3,000 public domain Christian hymns available. And then others as well, like easybyte.org. One that I was particularly excited about, not in MIDI format, but I want to say in MP3 format, is the website of James Kibbe, who has the complete works of Bach for organ recorded and available for free download. So I downloaded some and listened to it just on my headphones as I was working, and it was really pleasant to listen to his organ music. So that was a wonderful resource that was shared. In addition, people talked about the ABC music format, which I wasn't familiar with, but there are open source music editors that will allow you to work on music if you have scores or whatever and create recordings and then save in MIDI format. And then other discussion kind of centered around free sheet music resources that are available on the web from the International Music Score Library Project, from the Mutopia Project, and also from 8notes.com. So again, we'll have lots of links around this free organ music discussion in our show notes for today, so check those out.
Great. And Norbert, thanks for the question and using listserv.
Definitely. Next, this kind of harkens back to the concept of stand-up desks. That was one of the things we talked about on the show fairly recently, and we heard from Pastor Emil Burgess, who serves at Trinity in Caledonia, Wisconsin. He said, "I didn't catch the episode where you guys talked about hourly exercise and stand-up desks, but I was glad to hear the community feedback from this episode, so I thought I'd share what I use sporadically at seminary and more often now in ministry to work standing up." So he actually sent us a link. He says it's a podium thing I found at a thrift shop, and he invested in a rubber mat to stand on since he's usually in his churchy shoes at the office. So you want to be comfortable. Let me just share my screen again to show you Emil's photo that he shared via Google Plus. So it's kind of a desktop podium. If you don't have a full standing podium, you can have these things that prop on top of a desk to give you that podium height, and he's using that to put his laptop on to get it to that typing height standing up. So and he even in the photo includes the mat that he has on the floor, so you can see the comfy mat that he stands on as well.
It's like he's making effective use of a binder there too.
Yep. Got it all going on.
Whatever works.
Yep, definitely. So thanks for sharing, Emil. We appreciate hearing from you.
Cool.
We also
have you ever tried that, Sally? Work standing up?
I haven't. Kevin has, and he likes it, but I just haven't been in a position to be able to do that.
Yeah. How's his DIY project going, by the way?
Yeah, we're waiting. he's dreaming of it. It's on his list of things to do, but not right. happening yet.
So. Okay.
I will keep you informed, though. All right, several comments from our friend, Pastor Rob Gunther, who serves at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. First up, he shared a link to getdoorbot.com, and I'll just read his comments first. He says, "It might be a cheap security system, pretty convenient anyway, and it looks like a well-thought-out design." So check out DoorBot, which apparently was on TV on the Shark Tank television show, which is where people kind of pitch their ideas or whatever and potentially get venture capital funding. And this one made it. And it's basically a doorbell for smartphones. So at your door, you would install a web camera, basically. And when people press the doorbell, you can converse with them on your smartphone. You could be around the world. It wouldn't matter because it's not tied to you actually being in the building to answer the doorbell, per se. But instead, it's just a Wi-Fi-enabled video doorbell, and you can see and talk to the visitors. So,
but they can't see you, probably.
Correct. So
their only way to sign for UPS that way.
Right.
Awesome.
It is. That would be great. But I can think of, you know, school configurations that aren't ideal for, you know, covering the door and actually having someone physically in visual sight of the door to the school. So you could set one of these up for $199 and be able to see who's at the door when the doorbell rings.
That is very cool. I'm very tempted by that.
Yeah, sounds like good stuff. All right, next a comment from Pastor Gunther about his paperless efforts. I thought this was interesting. He's right in there with us in our whole paperless discussion. He says, "One change they've made at his congregation is to combine all of the church council reports into one document on Google Drive before the meeting. So then at the meeting, when they get together as a church council, we project it on the wall and scroll through it. No time wasted passing papers around, shuffling through to find the right one. And since guys had to prepare ahead of time and read it ahead of time, the meeting usually goes pretty quickly. We haven't had a council meeting longer than 90 minutes since starting this practice." So,
I must hold it outside. You're in Kenai, Alaska.
Pretty efficient
way.
That's
amazing.
A
90-minute council meeting regularly. That's
true.
Good job.
Yep. And then finally, he sent us a link to the Snippet app, which I'm not sure. It may just be iOS. Let's take a look at their website. I have it pulled up here. It's basically a an app for publishing ebooks in their format, basically. And he took his existing book, In His Sandals, I believe it's called, which is a collection of his sermons, and put them into snippet format and got published. So you can find his book on Snippet, and I think he said it costs like 99 cents. They won't allow him to give it away for free. So there is a cost to it, but it's basically another rich publishing format that's optimized, I think, for tablets and smartphones, that kind of thing. So Rob is officially published there as well.
Yeah, all I'm seeing are iPhones there, but and iPads. But.
Yeah. Doesn't just come right out and tell you that, but that sure is what they have pictured. So I'm guessing it's an iOS app.
Okay.
So good stuff. All right. Back to my mind map, and the next notes that I have are different links that were submitted to us via DIGO. And for those of you that aren't familiar, you can be part of our Wells Tech DIGO group, and anytime you see something you think that might be beneficial to others, you can just tag it with the Wells Tech group, and we'll all see it there, and we'll be able to talk about it on the podcast, that kind of thing. So several links that were shared, I'm just going to whip through them. They're from Jason Winjet, Rachel Pearson, Timothy Gebelhaus, and then a few from me. So give me just a second to switch my screen again. We'll take a look at those.
You're really exercising the screen sharing today just to make
sure
it's working.
trying hard. Rachel shared a link to Computer Science Unplugged, which is basically a free digital download. You can get it in PDF format. They even have it in multiple languages. And it's a computer science curriculum. It's very well done. I've actually used this in the classroom. And has some big names behind it. And it's not something that you need a computer even to teach. It teaches concepts like binary and all kinds of interesting things, and uses great examples, has great hands-on activities and things to help people understand, help students understand programming, computer science. So excellent curriculum. Next, a link from Timothy that was to onlineconvert.com, and his comment was he's found that if he converts Word files to HTML using this converter, it gives you some really clean HTML. So I don't know if any of you have experience with converting text that's already nicely formatted in Word or even Excel or whatever, and trying to get it into a web-friendly format. And a lot of times it'll come across fairly decent looking, but the coding behind it is super messy and heavy and difficult to work with if you want to make any edits to it once it's on the web. So Tim says this is the way to go. I typically recommend people just put it into Notepad to strip out all the formatting and then format it clean in the HTML editor. But I'd love to try this out and see what kind of clean HTML code I get from onlineconvert.com.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of converters there, audio files, video files, image.
Yep, they've got it all.
Cool.
All right, next up, a couple that I tagged. One is called Inspired Writing. This is for my language arts teacher friends. This is from the Littleton Public School System in Littleton, Colorado. And they've put together a really friendly, it's actually a Google site, with all kinds of different resources available, pre-writing, drafting and editing, publishing and evaluating, things for teachers, scaffolding, and other things. So I think that what you'll find here is just some really vast resources related to all different aspects of writing. I think it's very well done and very thorough. So if you're a language arts teacher, check out the link in the show notes to Inspired Writing. And then I also tagged this website. Have you ever heard of Alexio, Martin?
Nope. I can't say that I have.
Church management software solution, and I know there's many of them out there, but this one was particularly interesting because they have a new kiosk tool that they're selling to churches where people can walk up. It's almost like your server at a restaurant goes up and works with a touchscreen computer to place your orders or whatever. People can walk up in your church lobby and give their offerings on a kiosk, swipe their cards and things. But it does more than that. It has abilities to sign up for groups or volunteer and all kinds of different things that, that you want to put into your kiosk. And I'm not saying that any of our churches necessarily will go this route, but I just thought it was innovative and an interesting concept to allow people to interact with your database, basically, at a kiosk, a touchscreen kiosk in your church. So.
Any pricing there?
Yeah, no, it's all secret. If you click on I'm interested, click here to order, then they'll contact you to talk about pricing. So no clue how much it costs, but sounds, I thought it was interesting.
Sounds pretty new. Okay, cool.
Yeah. One more link that I tagged, and I saw this in the CLS weekly e-news that comes out from our Lutheran Schools office there at the Synod, and they were sharing this flyer for Google Apps training, and several of our friends, our Wells Tech friends, have collaborated to offer Google Apps training to schools who may be interested in getting started with Google Apps for Education or Chromebooks. So there's contact information on the flyer for Kirk Godstick, Shelley Karstens, and Rachel Pearson, three friends of the show who are doing great things with Google. So if you are looking for that kind of resource, perhaps they can help you out.
Very nice.
All right, let me head back to my mind map to get a little bit more perspective on this list. I think we're up to a voicemail that we received, Martin. Do you have Jim Hoff for us?
Let me see if I can make that happen here. I've got to manage my, juggle my technology. Okay, we will go to our playlist and hit play.
Hello, Sally Draper and the Wells Tech Bunch. Have a question about projecting video songs for praise music in our church. I have requests every week to put on a video song, and I usually find it on YouTube. They send me a link. I convert it with iSkySoft Studio. And aside from the obvious copyright violations, there's a chance that there's a better quality available somewhere. I've been looking for praise music that would fit our Wells Church format, and I would like to find a way to project these correctly and legally. Our equipment isn't that great, but we do enjoy it. We do one per Sunday. I was hoping you could turn me on to a source of these songs, videos, that I could download and project. Thank you very much. Jim Hoff.
And our thanks to Jim Hoff. I do have a suggestion that we've made in the past. I don't know if you have thought about that, Sally, but Worship House Media is the place that I normally direct people to. And actually, I don't have that up, but let me go there quickly. WorshipHouseMedia.com. And hopefully, there we go. Let me do a quick screen share. Worship House Media has been around quite some time, and they have all kinds of resources, PowerPoints, video, audio, all around different themes and concepts. They have countdowns, worship tracks, mini movies, still backgrounds. All kinds of stuff. It's worshiphousemedia.com, resources for the creative church. And that would be one place that I would start. And I've recommended this in the past. I think not always from the fact that you're going to find just the right video that you can play or resource that you can use, but just kind of an idea starter. Some of the images that they use may suggest other things that you may want to use. They've got just a wealth of information, a good search engine, just a nice selection, and at relatively inexpensive prices. If I go into worship tracks here, you can kind of see some of the things that they offer and some of the prices that they have. You know, anywhere from $12 to $15, something like that, in that price range. So not piggy bank busters, but yeah, and you usually get what you pay for, and then you can reuse it as many times as you want. So I think a valuable resource.
very good. And I know there's a few others. Muddy River Media comes right to mind. And I think there's one other maybe that we've talked about on the podcast before. To speak to the YouTube links and things like that, I think you're limited in terms of YouTube videos to the definition, the level of quality that it's published. You know, obviously you can't go higher than what's available there, but there are ways to notch that up if you look at the DPI that's displayed there or whatever. I would recommend if you're going to use YouTube, you know, embedding them on a site or downloading them potentially and not going with the whole YouTube wrapper and the videos that pop up at the end and things like that. There's ways to turn that stuff off. We've talked about on the show before, someone I think in the past asked if we could come up with like a collection of recommended videos, videos that other people are using or whatever in these kind of settings, and maybe we need to find some way to collaborate and at least share links to good video resources that are out there. So yeah, something else that we need to consider.
Be part of our upcoming wiki migration project is trying to fill that with those resources. Thank you, Jim, for taking the time to send us a voicemail. He did that by going to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and clicking on the link on the orange button on the right that says send a voicemail, I believe.
It's a blue button.
Let me
transition over to that, and you can see the send a voicemail link here on the right side of the Wells Tech page.
Very good.
All right. Just a couple of more community feedback items to mention. One is that we heard from our friend Lynette Huppman, and she was asking questions about Shepherd Staff software. They're looking for something fairly straightforward, easy to use for managing their church database, and they came across Shepherd Staff and wondered if we had any information about it. And of course the answer is yes. We are partnered with Concordia Technology Solutions through our Shop Wells program. You can actually even get a discount if you purchase Shepherd Staff. If you mention that you're a Wells congregation, there's a 10% software discount. And I pointed Lynette to the fact that they also have a new software, Church 360, which is a web-based church management software. So more of the anytime, anyplace access kind of thing. So certainly Shepherd Staff is a great option for you to consider. I would caution you in thinking that you're going to find something that's uber easy, because database management is got a bit of a learning curve no matter what you go with. But I think Shepherd Staff is reasonable to learn and work with.
Yep, I totally agree.
All right, and then a comment from Donna Hastrider. Martin, this was a connection that you made and someone that was interested in mobile apps in particular.
Yeah, she is. She's got some ideas for a mobile app and was looking for somebody to help her with that. So we'll probably put this on the listserv as well, but wanted to announce it here that if you are interested in maybe assisting Donna with her mobile app project, it's mostly for kids, kind of upper elementary grade kids with ideas for games and things to get them into their Bibles. And so she's looking for mobile app developers who would maybe be interested in taking on a project or at least giving her advice or pointing her in the right direction. So in the show notes, we'll include her information as well as on the listserv, reaching out to people who potentially can help her out. So.
And then we'll wrap up our community feedback with a message we received from Randy Nepson. He's, I believe, down in Texas. And he contacted us to let us know that Google Apps Admin Dashboard, the old version, has been completely grandfathered, I believe, as of February 3rd. So if you're a Google Apps administrator, you're probably familiar with the fact that they pushed out a new administrative dashboard. And I think basically all of the functionality is still there. It's just a lot more icon and graphic driven than the old dashboard, but it's definitely an adjustment if you were used to the old dashboard. So if it caught you off guard, there's lots of training resources available. I found one article in particular that I'll link to in the show notes called The Complete Guide to the New Google Apps Admin Console, and it kind of walks you through what to expect with the Admin Console and the changes that are there. It has great screenshots and things for people to kind of see how it's all working and stuff. So hopefully you aren't off guard and you're aware of the changes and able to navigate your way around, but I would definitely say there's plenty of resources out on the web that'll help you if you do need assistance with that.
Good. As you mentioned before, go to wellstech.wells.net. That is our show notes page where you can leave a comment on a particular episode, or click on any of the links at the top, the little buttons at the top. It'll take you to many of the other channels on which we're listening, Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest. Those kinds of things are all available for you, as well as different places where you can find the podcast, our RSS feed, Stitcher, iTunes, those kinds.
And look, just in a comment from our friend Rachel Pearson, they've also released the Google Admin app for iOS in addition to Android. So you can control your dashboard from your mobile device as well.
Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate that. Let's talk about next week. We're going to talk about the exciting, the thrilling, the edge of your seat topic of copyright.
Sounds more like a horror movie to me than an exciting.
It could turn into a horror. It could turn into a nightmare if you're not careful. Our voicemailer today referenced copyright concerns and issues too. So something you really want to pay attention to, and we're going to talk about it. And hopefully we'll have somebody that will join us who could help us along the way as well. So tune in next week for a deep dive into copyright. Sally, we have some music this week. It's from X Corday, and is this the name of the song I see below here, Lutheran Woman?
Yes, it is, and if you aren't familiar, you need to go right over to Wells Tech and download it, Martin. Good stuff.
Wellstech.wells.net for a link for the next week to download the song Lutheran Woman. I'm going to go download it just because I'm very curious now.
It's a takeoff on Pretty Woman, and they do a good job with it. It's pretty fun.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right, let's close the show and thank our live viewers. Thank you for joining us, and encourage your friends and family members and whoever to join next week. Remember, every Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock Central Standard Time. It's the time zone we're in at this point, and we'd be glad to have you. But if not, please load up our podcasts in iTunes very soon. You'll be able to get the video of the show in iTunes as well. So we're kind of excited about that.
Moving into the 21st century.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.